Welcome, listeners, to the Stories, Fables, Ghostly Tales podcast. And I've been working extra hard to bring you a listener story mega episode. So now that Valentine's week is over, I promised to read out listener stories that have been sent in to me via email. And today is that day, and they focus on real paranormal accounts and fictional horror stories. You are in for a treat. Also, if you have any stories or know anyone who has any stories to send in, feel free to reach me at storiesfablesghostlytales@gmail.com. And here are the stories you'll be listening to today. The Girl and the Shadow by Jay, My 200-ish Old Farmhouse by Celine, Roadside Fog by Diva Sinula, The Key to a Secret Place by The Red Brigade, This Really Happened I Swear by Anonymous, and lastly, My Room by Gabby. So strap yourself in, my lovely listeners, and grab yourself a hot tea. Today, I have a Japanese grape tea that is really, really strong. And so far, I'm loving it. It has this lovely citrusy blend, whilst also being super light. The best bit about it is obviously that delicious grape flavor. So very, very rich. The Japanese really know their teas. Highly recommend it. Now, turn off the lights, the sound up, and get ready for something creepy. The Girl and the Shadow. The wind was cold. She stood at the bus stop all alone, and all she could see were shadows. The shadows were everywhere. It was at this point she thought to herself, I watch way too many scary movies, and chuckled to herself. For some reason, all of the streetlights on this side of the town were set up at funny angles. Whoever designed the way that these lights were angled had no idea the creepy shadows that would be cast. They certainly never considered how a young girl alone at the bus stop in the dark would get creeped out by them. Somehow, on this dark and cold night, the shadows seemed stronger, stranger than usual. They were more menacing than on other nights. She noticed that there seemed to be one oddly shaped shadow. Then she realized that it was moving down the block, lurching along slowly and in her direction. After she noticed this, all the hairs on the back of her neck began to stand up. Goosebumps appeared on her arms and legs, and she knew something was coming. Her mind began whirling around, asking her one question about the thing coming down the street. Was it something living, or something that had been long dead? Oh my goodness, she said out loud. I am just standing here, freaking myself out. With that, she gave her head a little shake, sending her long curls bouncing and bobbing. She had heard her family talking about listening to her sixth sense. She tried to listen to her sixth sense, but it was not being kind enough to tell her if what was lurching down the street so slowly was benign, benevolent, or malevolent. Just then, she began to hear a very strange mewling sound fill the air. She had not heard a sound like that before, and it caused more hairs to stand up and more goose flesh to appear. Accompanying the strange mewling sound was the sound of a scrape and a thump. A scrape and a thump. She was not sure she should stay where she was, but the last bus of the day would be coming soon, and she didn't want to miss it, or she would be stuck on this side of town, and she had nowhere to stay if she did get stuck. She had to stay at the bus stop so she could get home tonight. She looked at the creepy, lurching shadow and listened to the mewling sound accompanied by the scrape and thump, and her stomach began to quiver. It's just a shadow, she told herself. It can't hurt me, she tried to convince herself, but the back of her brain was unconvinced. Whatever it was that was coming toward her could not be human, not with the kind of noise that it was making. But bravely, she stood her ground, refusing to run away, despite what her brain was saying. She refused to move from the bus stop and the little bit of light that had happened to shine directly on it. At least the person who designed it got that light right. The shadow that was moving towards her was unidentifiable. This seriously creeped her out and made her brain begin imagining all kinds of crazy images. The shadow had round spots and pointed spots and some that were less dark than others. What in the world can this be? She thought to herself. Whatever it is will be the death of you, her brain told her, and then tried to get her to run. She refused to listen to the panicked part of her brain and stayed under the light. The noise was so strange, the scrape and the thump, then the scrape and the thump. She had no idea what could make that kind of noise. While she seriously desired to be brave, she did concede to her panicked brain a little and took a couple of steps backwards into the bus shelter, just in case. Whatever was coming was continuing its tortuously slow pace up the street in her direction. Where was the bus? It was supposed to arrive 5 minutes ago. Why wasn't it here to save her from whatever was coming straight toward her? She could see it coming up the sidewalk, and she took another step back as the edge of the shadow hit the toe of her shoe. Then, just like magic, what was making the strange, creepy shadow hit one of the awkwardly facing lights. She looked down, and there, lurching towards her, was a very small kitten. Wearing an Elizabethan collar, and its front paw was caught in a mouse trap. "Oh my, you poor thing," she said, and hurried from the bus stop towards the small mewling kitten. She picked up the small little kitten and released its paw from the mouse trap. The kitten was shaking and still whimpering, but the mewing was now gone. She knew that this kitten had to belong to somebody because no stray cat puts on Elizabethan collars on all by itself. However, she decided she was going to have a wicked moment, and whoever it was obviously hadn't taken very good care of their kitten. So she cuddled him close in her arms and decided to take him home. Just then, the bus arrived, and she and her new kitten were safely seated on the bus and on their way to her home. Thank you so much, JS, for this wonderful listener story. Just brilliant. Possibly the only story I've ever done where no one died. So that is unique. Thank you so much, JS, or otherwise known as Jay. I love your passion for suspense. Just brilliant. And on to our next lovely story. This story is by Celine, and it's a true paranormal story. So let's dig in. My story is short and sweet, and actually happened, even though I'm not sure how much I believe in the second part of this story. I used to live in Italy, in a 200-ish year old farmhouse that had always been on my mum's side. She was born there. It had been since split into four homes, and when we moved there, the whole of the upstairs was still full of hay. You needed a ladder to get up there. We did a bit of work and got the upstairs sorted, so there was a roof, walls, and indoor stairs to actually get up there. That first floor only had our two bedrooms, being my parents and my own. I had always been freaked out by the dark, and our house was in the countryside, no streetlights. Complete darkness. I tried to be a big girl and ignore it though. I was probably around 15 at this point. Fully admit, I was a proper scaredy child. One night, I wake up in the dark, sleeping on my side, facing the wall. Behind me, I hear faint whispering. Not even whispering. You know when you try to whisper even softer, and all you hear is the lips smacking slightly? Try it now, you'll see what I mean. That sound was behind me. At first, I thought my parents had come into my room, in the pitch dark, and were standing over me. That idea freaked me out. You know that thing where you try to lay perfectly still, pretending to sleep, and suddenly your breathing goes weird? You get that need to scratch and need to stretch? I did that plus adrenaline. And finally, after about 2 to 3 minutes of this, I couldn't take it anymore and did the classic horror film thing of turning over in bed to reach for my lamp. Light on. Nothing there. Noises stopped. My door still closed. Fucking freaked. Not sure exactly when or why, but a while later I brought it up in conversation with my parents. My dad just goes, "Oh yeah, they're your mum's dead relatives. They've shown me around the place how it used to be and they're happy we're living here. So they must have been making sure you were okay." Like, what the fuck? My dad explained what the house used to be like. Where they hung the sausages to smoke, where the cows were, etc. My mum didn't know. She asked her aunt where everything used to be, and it turns out, Dad was right. That's my story. Not spooky or anything, even though the house always freaked me out. Anyway, all the best. Thank you so much, Celine, and a fantastically written account. I have to wonder what else your dad knows, and perhaps is keeping it under his hat. If you find out any more, Celine, I'd love to hear it. And again, thanks for sending this story through. This next story is by a YouTube listener, Diva Sanula. And going by this YouTube commenter's style, I reckon there's going to be some hilarity in this. This will be the first read-through, by the way, so I hope you like it. A couple of years ago, I made a costume of a dryad. If you don't know what these are, essentially they are forest spirits. I wear this costume at every chance I get, because it's really well done and gives my slim build and short stature a chance to be vaguely intimidating. One of my favourite times to wear this costume is when it's foggy. Personally, I am terrified of foggy conditions, and have found that being the scariest thing outside tends to remedy the chills. The drawback is that I spook anyone who crosses my path. This is a short story of one such encounter. 5:30 a.m, one March morning, as the sun is just starting to peek over the horizon, I look outside to see that the fog is so thick I could cut it with a knife to put on my toast. Granted, I live right next to the wetlands, so it was fairly common. Knowing I had a long trek to school ahead of me, I don my hood, cloak, and mask, along with the lantern full of bright LEDs to help light my way, as well as warn any cars to my presence. Along my walk, I hear almost nothing save for the shrill cry of the varied thrush. Note to your audience, look up their sound. It's terrifying. They only sing early morning in February to March. I called them the screamers. The rest of the world is dampened in the way that only a thick fog can accomplish. So I'm already pretty scared and straining my senses in order to pick up on any danger, paranormal or otherwise. As I'm crossing the street, I hear the roar of an engine and freeze as I'm caught in the path of a large pickup truck which has slammed to a stop probably 3 meters from where I stood. He didn't have his headlights on, and if it hadn't been for my lantern, I don't think he would have seen me. In a panic, I just stand there and stare the driver down, completely forgetting that I'm wearing a terrifying costume. The poor man has his cabin light on, and I can see the color drain from his face as he takes in the person before him. In a weird mix of terror and sympathy, I find the balls to approach his window and tap the glass. He's shaking, and probably pissing himself. I can hear him whispering, "What the fuck?" to himself over and over.
What the fuck? What the fuck?
It's only now that I remember what I'm wearing. So, decide to play along with my character. So I tap again, trying to prompt him to roll down the window. When he doesn't, I shrug and move to the nose of the car and point at the headlights, then point to my lantern. He got the message, and I'm blinded by headlights as they flare on. I give the hood a little pat and continue on my way, still a little shaky from my near status change to roadkill. Behind me, I hear the truck turn off, turn back on, and very slowly drive away. I hope I someday hear the story from his perspective about the time he almost ran over a skull-faced creature that reminded him to drive safely. Or maybe he has written me off as a hallucination, which is equally laughable. That concludes Divisanula's story, but here is the thrush sound that Divisanula was talking about. I hope I got the right animal. Divisanula goes on to say, I have three more for you. One explaining my fear of fog, and I need to sit myself down and finish them. Finishing this one has given me some courage. Absolutely fantastic, mate. And I look forward to them. And thank you again for sending this brilliant story through. And our next story is by another YouTube listener. The Key to a Secret Place by the Red Brigade. My eyes crack open. I could feel the cold air whip across my face in short bursts. The prickle of grass tickled my skin. It was a calm Tuesday. I had the day off from school, and I decided to spend it out in my backyard. You see, my yard had a large hill that led up into the cornfield. During the winter, my brother and sister would use this hill for sledding. During the summer, a water slide. Currently, I laid sprawled out on the top of the hill with my headphones in. Eventually, I watched the sun dip down on the horizon, making way for the beautiful night sky. My mother called out for me to come down for supper. That night, we were going to have pizza. Pulling my earbuds out, I proceeded to roll down the hill. Before I could hit the bottom, I felt a sharp pain in my back, causing me to yelp.
Ow.
Digging my nails into the ground, I stopped myself in the middle of the hill and stared up at what I rolled over. From the glint in the moonlight, I could see the handle of something black protruding from the earth. I crawled up and grasped the end of the object and pulled. It didn't budge. I pulled again. No dice. Fuming in annoyance, I grasped the end of it in both hands before yanking harder than I ever thought possible. There was a loud rip of roots and I found myself flying backwards, tumbling down the rest of the hill. I cried out in pain when I felt my ankle muscles tear. That cry was followed by a stream of profanity. Looking down at the object identified, it was a black key. The fuck? Why the hell would there be a key out here? I mumbled under my breath and rolled it around in my palm. Flakes of a hard, red, and sticky substance covered the end of the key. That and bits of soil clung to the key handle. For some reason, the feeling of dread clenched my heart in a vice-like grip.
Mark, get inside before the pizza gets cold.
The melodic voice of my mother calls out to me from the kitchen window. Pocketing the key, I broke off into a dead sprint across my yard and in through the back door and sat at the table. My older brother and sister take their seats on either side of me. After a conversational meal, I walk up into my bedroom and plop down in front of my 50-inch TV. I reached into my pocket and placed the key on top of the PlayStation 4 console. The next few hours were filled with lots of gaming and gamer rage. The night was perfect. That all changed around 12 p.m. I just finished a match of COD when the screen glitched and the edges were slowly being devoured by static. My brow furrows and the palm of my hand gently beats against the side of the telly. This only seemed to make the static worse. It eventually grew so bad that the entire game was merely colored static pixels. The blaring of automatic gunfire from my character in-game was muffled by the loud noise that was the TV. Then, without warning, the screen went black. What the fuck? My hand tapped the screen again and again. I tried changing channels, turning it off and on again, even unplugging the power cord. Nothing seemed to work. My eyes became bloodshot, and in a single fit of anger, my fist flew to the screen. To my shock and horror, my entire hand and half my arm plunged into darkness, almost as if the screen were a pool of thick syrup. Every time I tried to move my appendage out of the screen, more was slowly pulled in. Oh shit! Help! God, someone help me! I yanked and pulled, crying out for someone, anyone to help me. No one came to my rescue. No one heard my cry. Out of nowhere, I felt ice-cold hands grasp my submerged fingers, locking them in an iron grasp. I'm not gonna lie. I squealed like a pig. Seconds later, I felt myself get torn from my kneeling position on the floor and my body completely plunged into the black screen like someone jumping into a pool. The only thing I could do was hold my breath and flail around. Everywhere I looked, I could see nothing but total darkness. The only light being the outside world through the rectangular opening of my TV screen. The hand dragged me deeper and deeper, further and further away from the salvation that was the screen. My eyes slowly close, and I blacked out. I wake up feeling cold, so cold. Everything aches. Every moment was like trying to lift 100-pound dumbbells. Even breathing seemed to be a labored task I could barely achieve without feeling a powerful crushing sensation that pressed down on my chest. Imagine the feeling of a sumo wrestler who just ate at an all-you-can-eat buffet. That's how heavy it felt. Water dripped onto my forehead. I lazily look around, seeing gray skies. No clouds. My fingers grasp clumps of grass, which felt unnaturally cold at my fingertips. After a few minutes, my body began to feel normal again. Grunting, I shifted and climbed back onto my feet, trails down my forehead. When my vision focused and when it did, my blood felt as if it were replaced with ice water. For miles around, there were hills upon hills, each one covered in black grass. Each passing second, I could feel my heart rate increase. My hands shook. I began to sweat bullets. Where was I? The sky was a constant shade of grey. No clouds, no birds, nothing. Taking a tentative step forward, my shoe sunk into the grass and dirt. It felt as if the entire terrain before me were made of sponge. The first few minutes took a little getting used to, but little by little my pace quickened. Climbing the monstrous black hills were hell to climb. Whatever element composed this bounty soil, I hated it. Minutes turned to hours, hours turned to days. One notable thing in this world was the fact that I never really felt hungry or thirsty. There was only the constant feeling of fatigue. There was no night nor day. Time there was seemingly infinite. After climbing the 1347th hill, yes, I counted, my eyes locked with a mirror. It was maybe 7 feet tall, 5 feet wide. For an odd reason, I felt rather woozy looking down at it from my perch on the hill. With a running jump, I rolled down the hill and skid to a stop before the mirror. The body mirror radiated something. I couldn't tell what, but it felt like 100 needles were sinking into my skin. There was a loud pop behind me, causing me to crane my head back only to see nothing. When I turned back to the mirror, however, I screamed. In the reflection, my eyes had become jet black. The veins along my neck seemed to pump an equally dark substance through them. Chunks of my flesh on my neck, face, and arm looked as if they were about to fall off. There was a sickening crunch. My rapidly decaying hands shot to my mouth and I coughed. Oil-like blood splattered into my hand, followed by a few rotten teeth. Why didn't I run, you might ask? Well, that's because my legs were being swallowed by the earth. The ground became softer and more viscous than solid. Every attempt at moving was agonizing. Both my rotting lips part, allowing me to let loose a roar of pain. I blacked out, letting the darkness consume me.
Wake up, Mr. Marcus. It's time for you to take your pills.
Both of my eyes fluttered open and gazed into those of my personal nurse. Yet again, I had the nightmare. I've been in this psychiatric ward for a few years now. I'm 19. Ever since that day I found the key, I've suffered multiple mental breakdowns, paranoia, and even in some cases loss of cognitive processing. The final straw, however, was when I woke up one night covered in blood. I had murdered my entire family. The murder weapon? A black key. Piss off with your medicine, you old hag. I want to be alone. She silently placed the cup of pills on my nightstand before walking out of my cell. Her expression was pitiful and forlorn. Shifting around, I sat upright, but the straitjacket made this task rather complicated. After a little work, there was a satisfying click of the locks before my hands became free. The oversized sleeves droop by either side of me. Crouching down, I reached and grasped the small box under my bed. Once pulled out, the lid was discarded, revealing the black key. It speaks to me. It told me things. It told me of how it's going to change the world. Unlock the door for a being that will warp our reality. Mold it into a much better one. I don't know how much time I have now. Who knew that if you mixed a little hand soap and crushed pills, that they could act as a strong poison? My last words. If you find the key, don't touch. Never accept it. Never pocket it. If you do, your life will never be the same.
What a fantastic story by the Red Brigade. Yet again, my listeners just showcase their skills.
I am constantly blown away by you listeners. Seriously, every time I run through one of these recordings, I just wonder where the next awesome story is going to come from. And it always comes from, more or less, my listeners. And this story and the other stories are testament to that. Just brilliant. So thank you so much, the Red Brigade. And on to our next listener story. Our next story is anonymous. Sent to me directly, but doesn't want to reveal their name. They wish to maintain their privacy, and that is totally cool with me. The title of this story is, This Really Happened. I swear. I've been meaning to tell this to someone. I've only told two people and neither can really explain it. First off, I want to make this clear. I've had experiences before, but not this clearly. My story covers two events that lead into each other concerning my job and the building I work in. I'm an admin here, and as such, I was always chronically busy. My day begins a full hour before anyone else's. On this particular day, I got into work way early. I came into the building, which has four floors, and went to my office on the second. After delivering mail to everyone on my team's empty desks, I collected a set of invoices to bring up to the executive wing on the fourth floor. This was a normal and standard practice. I always began to fire off emails on my phone and set dates for meetings. I went to the elevator and waited for it to arrive. The whole time, I'm managing at least a month's worth of activities on my phone, not really looking anywhere but my screen. The building I work in used to be a high security bank, and so everyone has their own sections of it, so it's not uncommon to walk around and find people, just as I was, completely engulfed in whatever it is they're doing. The elevator came, and I got on and pressed the door to the executive wing. As I waited, I continued to email. Before the doors could close, they opened again, and I felt, rather than saw, someone get on. I started to put away my phone and asked what floor they wanted.
when I didn't get an answer. I figured they had headphones in, which is common practice, and turned to ask. But no one was there. The weight of the elevator, an old thing, indicated that there was. I stopped dead in my tracks and stared at the empty elevator as the doors closed and I went up with whatever was still inside with me. The doors opened to exit, and before I could set foot in the well-lit hallways complete with digital greeting monitors, every light went off. I held back a scream and got out just as floodlights kicked in. The greeting monitor stuck on an advert for a death day party for the old owner. The owners are Celtics, and this is tradition. I slammed through the double doors, hoping to see anyone in the suite, only to run straight into an equally distressed maid. She slammed into me and pushed me at arm's length and said, "You saw him too?" She took my wrist and pulled me as she turned the lights on as she went. She explained that she was cleaning as she usually did, office per office, when a man came through. She stopped to tell him that there were no executives in until 9 when he walked through the glass doors. When I said I wanted to see him, she stopped me, shook her head, and said, "Through," as in not open. My brain flashed back to the death day advert and immediately pulled my phone up, which had been on full battery and was now very low, and pulled a picture of the old owner up. "This," I pretty much yelled. "Is this him?" She immediately nodded and went pale.
"Yes, who is he?"
"He's dead."
She looked around and said that she thought he was done for now, at least. I dropped off the invoices and she kept cleaning. I told my mum and she said that he'd only been visiting and to let it go. So I never brought it up again. Not until later that year at Christmas. The boss was taking all receptionists out and needed cover for them. I forcefully volunteered. There are 3 positions. The first, the second, and the fourth floor. And guess where I got sent? It started off totally normal. I logged in, snacked on chips, took a couple of looking for work calls, and a couple of scam calls. People left for lunch, and then happy hour. Being so close to the holiday, some even left for the day. Before I knew it, I was alone. To keep myself company, I began to browse Twitter and Facebook. I was on guard, but not uneasy. A call came in then, that I will never, ever forget. A man called up and sounding slightly labored, like after a run, asked to speak to the past owner. This was not altogether uncommon, because he was still listed on our website, and sometimes scam calls would use his name to get into our executives' voicemails or calls. I rolled my eyes and started into the approved script to dissuade them.
"He's currently not in. Would you like to speak to our CEO or CFO?"
The man on the other line introduced himself first name and last and said that our past owner would love to hear from him, since they hadn't talked in years, but had been friends. I simply repeated my script, and then he interrupted me and told me that they had both been deployed in Vietnam and served together, and hadn't seen each other in 4 years. And he was in town now and didn't know how else to reach him except through his company, and that he'd tried earlier but no one answered. It hit me that this man was not lying, as what he said was true and he had even mentioned the division that the owner had actually served in. It hit me too that this man did not know he had passed. It made me incredibly sad, and I switched how I was responding to him immediately. I apologized for no one answering, as we had briefly had no receptionists, as we had switched shifts, for example when they stepped out and I signed in, and that I would love to get him to the owner, but that it was not possible, and thought it would be best for him to speak with Jim, the CFO, who was a close friend and could explain the situation better. He knew the man I spoke of, and told me that wouldn't do as Jim and him had a bit of a falling out. He asked again if the owner's daughter was around or any other family or even the owner himself, of which he stressed was really who he wanted to talk to. I could have told him, but my heart hurt much too much to let him down. So I tried to transfer him to Jim, but he let out a sad sigh and asked me if he could ask me a question, and that I would not lie. Having no reason to lie, I said sure. At this point, he asked me if the owner was evading the call because of what he had done all those years ago. If the owner was still angry. At that point, my heart broke. And I told him that that was absolutely not what was going on at all. And that I was sure that he just called for Mr. Jim when he was in. And that if he could reach him, he would be able to tell him everything. The man at this point kissed his teeth and said that he would try one more time and then not be able to anymore, because he had spinal cancer and would not be around after the holiday. I damn near cried. I took down his information and told him I would do everything to get him an answer. He then called me by my full name and thanked me. I was surprised because I never once told him my name, but I didn't say anything about it as he hung up and I said my goodbyes. I began to write Jim an email, and to add merit to the email, I looked the man's name up expecting to maybe find mention of him on our website or an old photo. What I found instead was an obituary from 2 years ago, dead from spinal cancer. Our old owner was present at the funeral. I immediately went to pull up the call log looking for anything to prove that this was some mean prank or joke. Instead, I found an 18-minute long phone call from 000000. I was frozen to my seat. Once I unfroze myself, I called the first floor and asked quietly if she had ever seen calls from a zeroed out number. She said yeah, but only once, and all she'd hear was static, so she just hung up. I never told Jim. Haunted fourth floor executive suite. Let's not meet. Thank you so much, Anonymous, for this spine tingler paranormal story. Now, on to our next listener story. Our next story is by Gabby, and she shares with us her paranormal story. When I was about 8 or 9, my family was moved out of section housing into a split family home due to a series of break-ins, domestic violence from neighbours, and a child passing away in the section housing. This, at the time, didn't matter at all to me. What mattered to my childish self was that I would finally have my own bedroom. There were 5 of us, you see. My 3 siblings and my mum and dad. Me and my brothers would always share a room, and I wanted privacy. Well, this house had a room, and I would regret it. It started off all right. We moved in, unpacked, and started living there. Except for the closet in my room. Now, this wasn't a scary closet, but it was oddly placed and had no door. And on top of that, would burn out every light bulb my mum would place inside. At the time, we thought nothing of it, except shitty wiring. The house was old, split oddly in between 3 families, and had been worked on by the owner, who's not a handyman. Life continued on in this neighborhood. Unfortunately, it wasn't a great place to live, and soon after we moved in, the local gangs began shooting out light bulbs in the streetlights. This meant my room became so dark, I couldn't stumble out without whacking myself in the head or scraping a knee. I was, and still am, clumsy. So I got up to turn the nightlight on, so I wouldn't kill myself trying to have a night's pee. This is when it started. My mum had this nasty habit of being awake late into the night and doing the rounds, and if she found one of us awake, she would come in to hold a conversation with us until we slept. Feeling her roam around the house was not uncommon. On this night, I felt that I thought she was there, standing at my door, sticking her head in and leaving. Except, when I went to go look, she wasn't there. I brushed it off and went back to bed. Then it happened again, and again, and again. Annoyed, I sat up and ran into the hallway, ready to tell my mum off for waking me up, and ran smack dab into a solid black outline of a man. I screamed, and immediately my dad and mum came running. Nobody was there, of course, but I was inconsolable. So I slept on the floor of the room and was told it was just a nightmare. The next night, I put on my big girl pants and went to sleep in my room, with the condition my nightlight stay on. I remember so clearly staring at my nightlight as the edges of my vision went foggy with sleep, and then it went off. Now I remember it would only go on or off if you pressed down on it. My hand shot out and turned it back on. It turned off. I battled with this for 3 or 4 more times before it completely died. I kept pressing, hoping it would spring back to life, but no such luck. I was in full-blown panic and suffering from panic attacks on a regular basis, fighting one off now knowing that if I had one right now, I would not be able to move. The black void of a man appeared at my door, stuck its head in and looked around and started heading inside. I froze. I could feel the beginning symptoms of a panic attack showing up. My hearing slowly fizzled out and my fingers went cold. The man sat on the edge of my bed. I screamed and ran at the clear door and landed with a thud in the hallway. My trash can began to be slammed around in the room as if someone was kicking it. And I woke everyone in the house up. As a final fuck you to me, a weighted down collection teddy bear that was almost too heavy to move was thrown off a shelf and directly at me. My mum reached me first. When she did, it all stopped. As I explained what happened, my mum flicked the lights in my room on to find the bear on the floor and the room trashed. I could see it in her eyes. She believed me. My dad was and is not a kind man, and told me it was me and my crazy brain that had done this, and said if anything was wrong, the dog would not go into my room. He grabbed the dog, who is still alive and with me now, by the collar and tried to push her inside. The dog would not go inside. At that, my mother gathered me and my siblings and locked us in their room for the night, and kept doing so for a week. What I didn't know at the time is my mum went to a priest who told her to cleanse the space and claim her home, which she did for the week, and we were not allowed to sleep anywhere but with her. After that week, I was allowed back, and I was never bothered again. Thank you for allowing me to vent, Gabby. Well, thank you so much, Gabby, for sending this through. Did you ever find out, perhaps, what it actually was? Do you think it could be directly related to the child dying in that part of the house? And did you ever find any more details about what actually went on during the priest blessing the actual room? If you have any more information, Gabby, that would be fantastic. And I look forward to any more stories that you have. Thanks.
Well, lovely listeners, I really hoped you enjoyed this listener-focused episode. A huge thank you to all my listener contributors, Jay, Celine, Divasanula, The Red Brigade, Anonymous, you know who you are, and Gabby. Your stories were just brilliant. And I look forward to any more that you and other listeners have. And now, there are 2 things I'd love for you to do. One is send your stories to me at storiesfablesghostlytales@gmail.com, because I don't know if you know, I love listener stories. Love them. And it's a great way for me to say hi and chat directly to the people that listen to this podcast. It's why I do this show, because I get to meet and chat to brilliant people. Yes, my listeners are brilliant. That's you, buddy. And the second request is dead easy. Share and scare. If you know someone who has a story but no one to tell it to, share me with them. If you have a story of your own, share it with me and, of course, us. And feel free to contact me directly via email. I always respond. And now, I must depart to the land of sleep, because in Australia, it is that time. This is the place where stories live, and you tale-tellers come to listen. Enjoy your day or night, and join me every weekday for our creepy tradition. And as always, till next time.